People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trojan welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. I'm excited to talk to my guest today because he is Ricardo McKenzie, who is the Provincial Minister of Cultural Affairs and Sport in the Western Cape government here. Mr. McKenzie is an experienced public servant and dynamic leader, as we'll discover, currently serving as the Provincial Minister of Cultural Affairs and Sport here in the Western Cape government. And he was appointed during the 7th administration, and he brings over 2 decades of combined experience in government, the private sector, and community engagement in this role. And you can imagine that cultural affairs is very important to us, with the whole world of music and opera and ballet and sport as well. So, Mr. Ricardo McKenzie, welcome to Fine Music Radio.
Thank you, and thank you for having me to talk about cultural affairs and sport.
Well, I'm intrigued to know what you're going to say. I hope you listen to us, you know, because we are a community station.
Yes.
And we are very proud of ourselves in sponsoring, well, not sponsoring in a sense, but giving promotion to all sorts of cultural and artistic events here in the Cape. But as we were coming into the studio, you surprised me when you said your offices, the whole DA structure is in Green Market Square.
Well, the whole government structure.
The whole government structure
is in that little pocket there, Green Market Square to Wales Street, our whole building, the Department of Cultural Affairs and Sport. We are in Green Market Square. Nearly take the whole floor there, 8th floor.
That's right.
Another political party is on the right-hand side of us. They're also on the square. I can name them, the ANC.
Yes.
Our DA office is also there in that area, 7 Burke Street, leading into Green Market Square. And then Parliament, the Western Cape Parliament, is also in Wales Street facing Green Market Square. And then the Western Cape government, where the Premier elites, it's also in 7 Wales Street facing going into Green Market Square. So the political power, if you want to call it that way, of the Western Cape government sits in and around Green Market Square.
I didn't realize it was all the parties as well as all the DA. Why is it there? Why is there any historic reason for it to be
in
Green Market Square?
Well, the historic reason, obviously, Parliament was situated there first. There were the Western Cape Parliament, and were the main parliament right behind us, the National Parliament.
Yeah, yeah.
So also, if we think about it, that whole sector there leads into it. And political parties generally want to be close to where their public representative is. And that is the reason why you find the ANC, the DA, is also there. And then all political parties that are presented in the Western Cape Parliament as floors on the 4th, 5th floor of our Western Cape Parliament. So all of them are also based there, of all political parties.
My goodness, quite a hot spot.
As you said,
a hub of political activity. How big is your staff, specifically your department?
Our department in the Department of Cultural Affairs and Sport, we have our main department. Then we have shared managed services, close to 400.
Wow.
And then that is excluding our partners, our shared facilities where we have subcontractors and those individuals. And then in the ministry itself, currently we 6 staff members working with me.
Your direct staff, in other words, 6 of them.
6 staff members working with me directly.
Okay. And is each of those staff members sort of knowledgeable about the field that you are in, cultural affairs and sport?
Each of those staff members is knowledgeable, and also 3 of them has been working with me in my previous portfolio as well. Interestingly, a job I had 20-odd years ago.
Yes, tell us
what
that was.
I was a private secretary. I used to be an executive assistant in the Thabo Mbeki administration to a national minister. And 13 years ago, I used to be an executive assistant to a former national minister of sport. And then 11 years ago, when I joined Parliament, the standing committee that I chaired is the Standing Committee of Cultural Affairs and Sport.
Okay.
So it's a sector that I'm extremely familiar with.
Yes. And we don't have to question your experience and qualifications. Yeah. But there's 2 little things I want to bring up here that I saw on your bio, which I find interesting. You were at one stage the co-owner and sales director of a small business.
Yes.
Recognized as the best small business financed by F&B in the 2007 to 2008 financial year. That's far removed from politics, isn't it, really?
It was far removed. I've been, since high school, I was very entrepreneurial. I used to sell fat cooker.
Oh, really? So you've got that streak in you.
I used to sell fat cooker at high school and post that as well. In fact, I, in the early, late 90s, early 2000s, I used to sell second-hand computers as well.
Oh, my goodness.
And I remember one day, I would always tell my daughters a story. I was selling a second computer, took a taxi from the 3 to Weinberg. The time I got to the guy selling the computer, I left the mouse in the taxi.
Oh, no. Did you ever find it?
I never found the mouse. It was half a product I was sold. Yeah. So that small business was, I ran it very well with a partner. And the 2008 market sadly hit us as well. The market crashed. Interestingly, how it crashed, because we supplied products to big businesses. And when they were effective, because we were a luxury product, we sold Biltong.
Oh, right, Biltong, yes.
I know a lot about Biltong as well. So we sold Biltong because they gave it away for free. They stopped giving that away for free and they stopped buying from us. They had a massive impact on us.
Yeah. My goodness. But another curious thing here, and I had to do a double take here. Yeah. You were the regional manager for the Western Cape of Dial-A-Bed.
Yes.
Now, that couldn't be further from politics and Biltong.
Yes, I sold beds as well. Yes, I sold beds. Very good business. Very lovely and a big business. Everybody has to sleep.
Yes, exactly. And it does well, doesn't it?
Does
it?
I mean,
it's
very well.
It's still doing very
whenever
well.
Whenever I drive past the stores, I'm like, yeah, I was involved in that business. Beautiful business. I loved it.
This is all your entrepreneurial side coming out in all these sort of things.
Business. And when I joined them, they were doing well. It was a good business. And when I left, they were also doing very well. In fact, they were bought out by private equity partners. That's how well they did.
Okay. This is good news. But we're going to return to your political career in a moment. But first of all, I'm interested to know what music you've chosen for us. So what is the first piece of music that you're going to share with us?
One of the first songs I've chosen that I think we all love is from Abdullah Ibrahim, Menenberg.
Oh, yes.
One of the sad stories is Menenberg is obviously a community that, you know, that comes from violence and gangs, as we all know. But Abdullah Ibrahim was given a different perspective many decades ago of Menenberg, and a song that we all love, a song. In fact, if it's up to me, I'll open the old Menenbergs that was closed at the waterfront. And sadly, when I spoke to somebody interesting a few months ago, he said the original Kippies is also closed in Johannesburg.
Oh.
So all these wonderful venues that played
traditional places, really.
That played beautiful music,
yeah.
But have inspired generations of jazz musicians or musicians in general. And that's why I like Menenberg.
Thank you.
The famous song Mannenberg by Abdul Ibrahim was the first choice of my guest on this week's edition of People of Note, Ricardo McKenzie, who is the Provincial Minister of Cultural Affairs and Sport in the Western Cape Government. Mr. McKenzie, we were talking about your entrepreneurial side before. Yeah. So now, the most important question is, how on earth did you end up in politics?
Yes, I worked for an investment bank called J.P. Morgan.
I saw that, yes.
And through J.P. Morgan, we worked on an international project, which interestingly now is very big in South Africa, called the BPO sector. That was called the call center sector.
Yeah.
And for working on that particular project, I was nominated for an award. They call it a Worldwide Service Award, which is an award given to employees who add a lot of value and who works very hard. I worked on the project for about 2 years as an addition to my normal work. And I then received the award as one of their best employees.
And you were very young. I see you were mere 26.
Yeah, I was very young, yeah. So
well,
I then received, thank you, I received that award as one of their best employees in the world. Through that, I met Esop Pahad.
Oh, yes, the minister.
He was the minister in the president's office, minister in Thabo Mbeki's office at the time, responsible for the administration of the presidency and everything that happens in the presidency. And he then asked me, hey, why don't you join government? We need young men like you not to be in the private sector, but also to be in government. And that's how I entered political administration.
You didn't say, no, don't be mad, I'm enjoying where I'm. Or you obviously like the idea of getting involved in politics.
I enjoyed the idea. It was at the seat of power, if you want to call it. It was on a Friday evening at the Union Buildings. And he said, can you start on Monday? I said, no, I've got a job. He said, who's the CEO of J.P. Morgan? He said, I've got Ricardo McKenzie. Can he start on Monday?
Really? Did
That's why
that?
I discovered power. That's why I realized, wow, is this how these guys do it?
And it became, you wanted to be part of that, clearly.
Yeah, and I wanted to be part of it. As a young man, I was very impressed.
You're a DA minister now.
Yes.
That
was the ANC administration.
And they got you in the ANC.
Yes, it was very good. And I enjoyed working there. But I've subsequently moved back to Cape Town. I then, private sector, Dialabet, several other places, my own small business. And then I got a call from somebody who worked with the then Deputy Minister of Sport, which was Fikile Mbalula.
Yes.
And he asked me to move back to Pretoria and help set up Fikile Mbalula's office.
In Pretoria. Okay.
I then moved back there and I worked with Fikile Mbalula.
Still part of the ANC
for about 2.5 years. That was many years before even the average man on the street didn't even imagine something like state capture existed.
Right, that is very true.
Yeah, obviously somebody was an administrator who came from the private sector. I didn't like what I saw and I didn't want to be part of it.
So you were aware of what was happening?
You could see what was happening.
Oh, was it as clear as that?
It was absolute chaos. It was absolute chaos. No one worked there for the interests of the state. And coming, put in perspective, I just joined from Dialabet. In Dialabet, answering the phone was your business.
Yes.
If you don't answer the phone, you don't get business. When I got there, people didn't answer the phone. In fact, somebody told me, why is this guy answering the phone? So I never forget that. So that was like a day one on the job, because this is not what I signed up for.
Yeah.
I sort of went through it for about 2.5 years. And through one of my old connects, I met with a young man who was still very young. He was working for the DA, which I sort of know, obviously in the politics, you sort of know who people are. His name was Jordan Hill Lewis.
Oh, I don't believe it. Really? He must have been very young.
He was very young. Jordan was, I think, 23, 24 at the time. He says, no, man, we can fix this country, man. Come move back to Cape Town. Let's join the DA and let's work and get South Africa back on the map. We deserve this. And I'll never forget, I was in Limpopo at the time, and there was guys doing business, but they were not doing business. They were like taking a pencil from A to B and they're like adding 30% on it. I was telling Jordan one day, I'm like, how is this possible? How is somebody just take a pencil from somebody, give it to somebody at 30% and they just get money? And this is not normal. Guy didn't build, coming from a small business where I build a factory if working.
Yes,
how is this people just making money? And this is not normal. And we were talking about this all the time, like for like a year and a half, how the state is being abused then. And Jordan got it at that young age. And I got it because I could see this is not normal.
Mm-hmm. And you were in the center of things, in fact.
Yes,
you,
we talked about it because we used to come down to Cape Town all the time and we used to meet for coffee. And we used to joke around it sometimes. Like, how could the guy just take a pencil at 40% and suddenly he's a businessman?
That's it. Of course, the tragedy is it's not a joke.
It's not a joke at the time, but we were both young and we used to.
Of course.
He wasn't much younger than him. That was the time he was still just working as an administrator in the DA. And then he became a member of parliament subsequently. Obviously, now we all know him as the mayor of Cape Town 15 mm-hmm. years later. But yeah, and I just left there. I just couldn't take it. I left without a job, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Basically, that was your departure from the ANC.
Yeah, I left and I moved to Cape Town. I applied to become a member of the DA's application process for Member of Parliament, and I'm a Member of Parliament now, 11 years later.
Gosh, was it an easy, so it must have been therefore an easy decision for you to join a party as different from the ANC as the DA?
It was, because it was value-based, and I've been here now 12 years now, if you can mm-hmm. think about it, mm-hmm. and it was about the people, something that I really, as a kid, particularly someone who ran a small business, who worked in private sector, who understand the value of service. And it's something that I always wanted to do, and I've not looked back since then.
Oh, good. Well, it's nice to know that, in a sense, you are our boss, because you're the cultural affairs minister, as well as sport. With these portfolios, do you get to choose or apply for a particular portfolio, or does the party give you a portfolio?
In our case, the premier is obviously the lead in the province, as the, if you want to call it, the boss of the province.
Mm-hmm. And that's Alan Windey.
Alan Windey, and the premier obviously decides on the team that he would like to be surrounded by him. And we have a discussion, and here I am.
In a very interesting portfolio, I would say.
Yeah.
But we'll come back to that. Are we going to have another piece of your music now? What's the next piece you're going to share
with us? The next song is going to be a song by Otis Redding. Change is going to come. It's a beautiful song, and it's something that resonates, I think, going back to those many, many years when I was sitting in Pretoria and thinking that this cannot be it, mm-hmm. that a change has to come in the country. Things cannot go this way. I remember sitting with a guy in the office at the time who interestingly became the deputy minister of police, the one who famously said the building on top of Long Street must be, but the people there must be burned down.
I said
to him, our problem in the country is this, is we need implementation. And he said, well, if you don't like our policies, move to where things get implemented. So when he was appointed deputy minister of police, I told people, that is the kind of person you appoint, who doesn't believe in implementation.
Yeah.
How is it going to fix the police?
Exactly. And look what happened. Yeah. Let's listen to Otis Redding. I'm down on my knees.
somehow I thought I was still able to try to carry on. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. Oh, yes, it is. Just like I said, I went to my little bitty brother. Oh, my little brother. I asked my brother, brother, help me, please. Oh, now. He turned me down, and then I go to my little mother. My dear mother, oh man. I said, mother, I'm down on my knees. But there was a time that I thought, Lord, this could last long. Oh man. Somehow I thought I was still able to try to carry on. It's been a
Otis Redding's song Change Is Going to Come. And that was, interestingly, a choice of my guest, Ricardo McKenzie, who's the Provincial Minister of Cultural Affairs and Sport here in the Western Cape Government. He's with me today in the People of Note studio. Interesting that you chose Change Is Going to Come, because you've been talking about feeling wrong up there in Pretoria, meeting people like Jordan Hill-Lewis, and then suddenly change is coming, or it seems to have, since the DA did so well in the election. Must have made you happy.
Very happy, and very happy to see the government of national unity, because that's what we all have been longing for mm-hmm. the last, at least minimum, 11 years, to say things at national level cannot go on like that. And the national government of national unity is doing very well. Not perfect, obviously.
Of course.
We
not,
all know no. that, but I always.
And we knew there would be issues.
We knew. I mean, this is our first time. People forget
in history.
In Europe, they had coalitions going for the last 30, 40 years, but they're still not getting it right. They recently dissolved the Dutch government after, and they've been doing it for 30, 40 years.
Yes.
So we've only been doing it for the last year, and people expect it to work perfectly.
Yeah. And it won't, it can't. There are too many differences and many substantial ways.
As long
ways.
As the intention is great and exactly. we're moving forward, it's important. I joke with people that previously emails used to go and die in Pretoria. Now we get acknowledgement of receipts.
That's
a massive improvement.
And that shouldn't be a surprise. That should be normally happening.
That should be normally.
Yeah.
But because there was this no care attitude and mm-hmm. they governed outrightly, nobody cared. Now there's at least people acknowledge receipt of your emails.
Let's talk a little bit about your portfolio that you were given, cultural affairs and sport.
Yeah.
It's an interesting portfolio because it's nice and it's not financial or, I mean, everything is financial,
yeah.
but you know, it's not boring. It's interesting because Cape Town, I'm sure you'll agree, is very much an artistic center of South Africa because we've got a wide amount of social activities regarding yeah. the arts here in Cape Town. And therefore, you are a very important person in that field.
No, definitely. It's a fascinating portfolio.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating portfolio because the opportunity to make a difference in the mood of people.
Yes. The mood, that's very important.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Infrastructure built roads, and you're going to drive on the roads every single day, whether you're happy or sad, you still
yes.
have to use that road.
Yes.
Whether if you go to the arts can change your mood, whether it's music that we've just listened to, whether it's rugby and sport, or whether it's ballet, or whether it's opera. It really sets how we as human beings feels. And if you remember 1994, it wasn't infrastructure that changed the mood of the country. It wasn't a new building of a billion rand building. It was sports that changed the whole mood of the country.
That is true.
The Springboks winning the World Cup, the yes. African Cup of Nations, the next year, Josiah and all those guys who did well at the Olympics. So it was that changed the mood of a country. So this portfolio is an incredibly important portfolio. Sadly, it's been severely underfunded since 1994, and we're working very hard to fund this portfolio because you can have the great infrastructure. You can have little to zero crime. Obviously, we all want it. Yeah. But if the mood of the people is not in a great state, you are going to find a very depressing nation.
Absolutely. But you also need the financial support from national.
Yeah.
Do you get your financial support from national government?
Yeah. The way it is structured is you get conditional grants, which is a grant that comes with conditions from the national government. And then you get, obviously, infrastructure grant, in our case also, a helping support municipal infrastructure grant where municipalities can apply to us and we help them to apply for national. And then in our pot of that, that we also get what they call the equitable share, which is what, obviously, we apply for funding to our provincial treasury, which obviously get their funding from national treasury. But I also served on the budget committee when I was an ordinary member of parliament. And one of the things that we fought for many years, and that my colleague, the now Deputy Minister of Finance, also fighting for, it's a fair share of the kitty. We're not getting a fair share of the kitty of the Western Cape. In fact, the stats, as a latest census, has proven what we have said for many years. We have many people in the Western Cape, hundreds of thousands more, but the budget doesn't follow the people moving to the Western Cape. Let me give you a practical example. A school in Cape Town has 1,000 learners. School in the Eastern Cape has 1,000 learners. Because of the movement of people over the last 10 years, that school now has 800 learners. In fact, there are two schools that are empty that we've known. The school in Cape Town now has 1,200 learners. But the money don't follow the 200 learners. That means the school in Cape Town now have more desks. The teacher now have a bigger class. School in the Eastern Cape have the same amount of desks. They should theoretically have less. They should have theoretically has less teachers. And the infrastructure in Cape Town should now get more money because the roads are more busier. The infrastructure for the taxis should now get more money because they need more taxis is needed. So, literally in Afrikaans, you're farming backwards if you don't get the money following the people moving to the Eastern Cape. And that's an impact on infrastructure. Same with sports facilities, sports infrastructure, etc. So, a big thing that we've been fighting for is a fair and just allocation of funding to help fund all portfolios. Obviously, us, we also want a bigger share of the kitty as our sports, arts and culture.
But why don't you get a bigger fund? Why are you almost forgotten or mitigated against?
The equitable share formula has never been adjusted. And they are now with the government, and they're so important to the government of national unity because they are in the process of doing that. We don't know how long it's going to take. And that's something that the previous government, May 29, before the May 29, has been stubbornly refused to look at. Mm-hmm. And now when we have a deputy minister, that's why we fought so hard to get a deputy minister of finance to ensure that they look at these things and it gets put on the agenda and we have to fund it because you only can do something if it's funded.
Because the problem is, another logistical problem is, as you said, Cape Town is filling up with people, semigrating, they call it, from elsewhere, not just Johannesburg, but elsewhere.
So from elsewhere, but you need the infrastructure
to help accommodate
it. Exactly. You need the schools to help accommodate the learners, and that is only fair. So we're not asking for more what we need, we're just asking for fair and just allocation.
Yes, that's fair enough. And we've got good roads here, we don't have potholes.
We've got great infrastructure in the Western Cape.
We have.
Yeah.
And that's thanks to the DA very much, isn't it? So it's clearly working, and you have people on the team who are working very hard to see that this sort of infrastructure continues being improved.
No, definitely. We have great public servants. We have great governance model. We've got a good governance. We always tell people good governance matters. Because if you govern well, if you don't spend the money, if you don't take that pencil and add 40% to that pencil,
exactly.
You can actually get two pencils and not just one pencil plus 40%. So if you have good governance, it helps, it matters, and it enables you to get things done and get it done on time without having to pay somebody at the back.
Exactly. Your pencil analogy has actually turned out to be very good.
Yes.
I think people can understand what you mean by this putting on 40% onto this pencil and just extrapolate that to the big picture.
Brilliant.
And there you have. Yeah. Okay, it's time for another piece of music before I ask you your next question.
Thank you. I'm going to ask if you can play Young Men by the Mane of Benjamin Jafta. He's from the Cape Flats, from Mitchell's Plain, to see in this kind of age a young man in the jazz genre coming through and playing jazz music. And it's beautiful. His music is absolutely fantastic. And the reason also, we'll speak later about how, as the Western Cape government, we support the arts and how this young man is also performing very well.
That was a song by Benjamin Jafter. And another choice, incidentally, of my guest, I'm talking today on People of Note to the Provincial Minister of Cultural Affairs and Sport here in the Western Cape Government, Ricardo McKenzie. Mr. McKenzie, you mentioned that the singer, Benjamin Jafter, came from Mitchell's Plain,
yeah,
and how he has improved himself and releasing songs like this. And isn't it extraordinary that the Mitchell's Plain is such a disaster area at the moment? Mm. And with you here, and I know it's not your portfolio,
yeah,
but the DA has done a lot, but crime is definitely a cancer in this province, isn't it?
Can I just say, I've actually been very privileged that I've been working in Mitchell's Plain for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that area extremely well.
Ah.
And it's obviously quite a vast area. And there's also many success stories that comes out of Mitchell's Plain. But at the moment, and over a period of time, there's been very terrible things coming out. I mean, the last week we had 13 shootings, several people dead. And this is not the first time that has happened. It happened a few months ago. Happened about 2 or 3 years ago. And gang violence has been, as you know, the Cape Flats has been coming on for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason is obviously gangsterism in the colored community. As a colored man myself, I can say gangsterism has been big in the colored community for many decades, period of time, dating back to when I was young, when the Hard Livings and the American gangs was quite big. So,
and we blame all that on this, the movements that apartheid created.
Created the movement of apartments.
From the city, the
buttons,
so far out.
Back in the day, buttons were smuggled into the colored communities by the apartheid government. Those are things that we all know, obviously. But I think in the last few years, it's become very worse. And one of the big reasons, I'm sure if you know that police officer that was convicted for selling thousands and thousands, not 100 guns, 200 gang,
yes,
guns, thousands of guns into the gangs. And not all of those guns were found. So the proliferation of guns on the Cape Flats and in many communities. What further adds to that is a few years ago, 12 guns were stolen at Mitchell's Plain Police Station. And I personally, then I was a member of the Standing Committee in the Western Cape, wrote to the then commissioner, wrote to the then minister to ask, where's the consequences of these guns being stolen? They suspended the one. He was back the next week. A few years later, another 10 guns were stolen from the police station. Zero consequences. So those guns find its way into the system. And I did parliamentary questions like we are allowed to ask parliamentary questions. And one of the parliamentary questions that was asked about conviction rates. What is the gang conviction rate? And horribly, the answer came back at the time. Gang conviction rate, I can't remember, 2017, 2018, was about 3%.
Wow.
3%.
That's unbelievable.
3% gang conviction rate.
Yeah.
Now, that is criminal. That is criminal.
Why?
For the gang 3%? Conviction rate.
And I started, do we know why?
I'll get into that now. And it started from the chain of evidence. And when I met with the National Deputy Director of Public Prosecution, Advocate Bell, here in the Western Cape, and I raised a similar thing. Why don't we have prosecution-led investigations? So when a crime takes place, even as a junior prosecutor, arrive on the scene and help the detectives gather the evidence to ensure the case is fully foolproof, if I can. I know it's a resource issue. I know they've struggled with money, but the NPA is also severely underfunded. Also, mm-hmm, it's a skills issue. I mean, detectives, mm-hmm, sitting with 600 cases.
Yeah.
Based on 365 days, and if you do drive out, if you do 2 cases a day, given the vastness of the city and the province, it is unlikely for him to get to those cases in,
yes,
a year.
Yes.
Just normal human beings.
Absolutely.
I think even Superman will struggle. So we really need to capacitate SAPS, capacitate detective service, capacitate forensic services, and we did an oversight visit also to the provincial lab. And they had to send the ballistic testing at the time to Pretoria. The tender that was given out for guns to be tested was done in Pretoria. So if you were
doesn't
shot
make sense, does
as
it?
A
it
victim
make
of
sense.
Crime,
yeah,
the tender was delayed by many years. It means if you're a detective, if you do all your hard work,
yeah,
to give, get the chains, get the guns, get the gun, but you need the evidence.
Yes.
We are a law-abiding citizens. We believe in the rule of law. You need to convict someone or based on evidence, not on because somebody said so. You know, and that's what good democracies function on.
Yes.
On that basis.
Yes.
So that detectives, the frustration on some of them, because I know some of these guys, we grew up together. So the frustration, they get the evidence, but then they must wait for ballistics or the testing to be done, you know, for all those things. And then if you're a magistrate, you can't
prosecute me or charge. You can't prosecute me based on what you heard or based on my feelings.
You need the evidence. You need the hard evidence.
So that is why the conviction rate is a chain of, sadly, of systems that has been destroyed over the last 30 years by, sadly, so national government. As much as we don't want to play with the politics, but it's the reality of the matter. When you have the NPA not being fully capacitated, not being properly funded, people are appointed, it was corrupt, from General Lemoore, who was in charge of police in the Western Cape, up to now. You've seen what happened. Kanazi dropped bombshells on Sunday. But it's not new to us in the Western Cape. It's not new to us who works in. Lieutenant Kinnear, who was fighting gangsterism, who begged for protection, was assassinated.
Yes, I remember.
No one is in jail. So you see how gangsterism flourish in places like Mitchell's Plain.
Yes.
Because the gang knows, I'll be arrested today. By tomorrow afternoon, I'll be out again. Yeah. I can kill you because by tomorrow afternoon, I'll be out. Because the state don't have the capacity to do that. 2 weeks ago, before the shootings take place in Mitchell's Plain, and again, I'm talking about it not from years ago, because I was there. Myself and Ian Cameron, I invited him as a chairperson of the Standing Committee of Police to come with me on a walkabout in Mitchell's Plain to show him.
Wow.
Let the Standing Committee of Police see what we see every day. Ian Cameron did a walkabout with me in Mitchell's Plain. It was a Thursday evening. But 8:30, 9:00, on a random stop, one of the LEAP officers that the city employed, one of the LEAP officers, pulled a car over that looked a bit suspect. Two guns in that vehicle. Random stop. No coordinated attack. We were just busy there, and the LEAP officer did his round. He pulled over the car, BMW, random stop. Guess where they put those two guns in? In a plastic bag. If I'm a good lawyer, of course I'm going to get my gang off, my gangster off.
Gosh.
You see where the problem is?
Yeah, it is.
And we asked the police, but where's, they're waiting on supply chain, on procurement, and the vehicles are in for repairs. I mean, it is shocking how the police has been allowed to deteriorate over the last 30 years in South Africa to the state where they are in. One of the parliamentary questions I asked was about vehicles. Why is the vehicles at Lentegeul police station just standing there? Oh, they're waiting on parts, they're waiting on this, they're waiting on the tender. So if you're a good, hardworking policeman going to Menenberg or Mitchell's Plain or Yanga police station or Khayelitsha police station today, go and work, you have a plan, you know, you've got a suspect, I work to this police station, I think I could track this guy down there. You got there, your van is not working. It must be demotivating.
Demotivating.
That's for our police officers on the ground who are good, hardworking men and women who want to get the job done.
And who joined the police force for a reason.
For a reason. So you ask the question, it's a systematic failure of our justice system, Department of Justice, who cannot, in good sense, prosecute people. Under-resourcing of police. Mm-hmm. The Western Cape, we have 4,000, I think 4,800 is the exact number, under-resourced of what we should have. Tenders being at national government, a delay in supply chain, so cops can't put their evidence in proper bagging. Forensics that has been severely gutted, so they can't do it. And if you read that report that was done by, I think, Sydney Mfamadi in the intelligence service at the time when state capture, correct, you see that the resources were literally moved to fight political battles.
Yeah.
And that's what you saw. I mean, you saw it at the ANC conference where they had intelligence, those grabber machines. Those machines should have not been in the ANC conference. They should have been fighting gang crime. They can pick up telephone calls and those things.
Yeah. You know what? Before we get too depressed, is there a light at the end of the tunnel of all this?
There is a light at the end of the tunnel. And I'm very proud of what my colleagues in the city of Cape Town has done. Mm-hmm. And we as the Western Cape government with the formation of the LEAP officers.
Right.
We've taken a few billion rand to start the law enforcement officers in the city of Cape Town and fund them. And they are now making an impact on the ground because they have the guns, they have the uniform, but they need that investigative capacity that national SAPs have happened. We need that power to be devolved so we can fight, like in the city of Cape and any other metro in the country, can fight it more effectively. And that is what's hamstring us at the moment.
That's a very powerful thing you've been saying, Mr. McKenzie. But before I let you go, because we're almost at the end of our program now, I can't not ask you about funding for the arts.
Yeah.
Because as you said, in many ways, you're underfunded here, but we've got the country's finest orchestra, really, with the Cape Town Philharmonic Ballet Opera. Do you have people coming to you all the time begging for money?
We have, when I started this portfolio, I knew we were underfunded.
I knew
it was difficult for me to go and ask money for, take the teacher's money and take it, take a police officer's money and take it from me. So I knew we had to go private sector. And that has been our approach over the last year since I'm in this position. And it's coming to fruition. We've launched the first Jazz on the Train program in partnership with Heineken, in partnership with Prasa, where we have ticket train. And that is to enable and help jazz artists like Benjamin Jafta, who was on that train, playing his music on the train.
I saw reports about that,
Jazz on the Train. So we're working with private sector partners. We're now with Vumatel. We're going to make a big announcement in the next few weeks about how they're going to support the arts in Beaufort West, in George. So we're working with private sector partners to come on board. Standard Bank is on board. We met with EPSA top management. We had a meeting with FNB top management as well to say, private sector partners, please come on board and help the arts.
And they are coming on board.
They are coming on board. So we had a fantastic meeting with the Standard Bank 3 days ago, the Nice Oyster Festival. Yeah. So we're going back to them with a final a proposal on the 22nd of August in Johannesburg. They're also big supporters of the art. Same with FNB, same with EPSA.
So the corporates is
coming on board, because that's the only way at the moment. Otherwise, people are going to say, why are you giving Ricardo McKenzie the money for a teacher while his children are struggling with school? So the best way to go is to go to the private sector.
Okay.
And we're doing it.
So we must look up. We mustn't get depressed.
Look out, not depressed. We support the arts. We're launching some exciting
stuff. You look after us. You look after
the arts. Look after the arts.
The orchestra.
Look the orchestra. And yeah, it's fantastic things coming for the arts. And we're really looking forward to it.
It's been really fascinating talking to you, I have to say. And thanks for being so honest about so many things.
Yeah.
As I said, it's not meant to be a political interview. But sometimes in this country, you can't help delving into politics. So let's calm down with your last piece of music now as you leave us, Mr. McKenzie.
The last piece of music is also a really wonderful song. And I think we're ending it on a wonderful note. A son of Cape Town, Jonathan Butler.
Yes,
Take Good Care of Me and Take Good Care of All of Us.
Take Good Care of the Arts and Sports. Thank you. My guest on People of Note this week has been Ricardo McKenzie, who, as I've told you, is Provincial Minister of Culture, Affairs and Sport in the Western Cape Government. Mr. McKenzie, thank you, and all strength to your arm.
Thank you very much.
Oh, baby. I found the nerve to try again. Given time will mend. Will you be gentle if I surrender all to you? To you. Please understand that I've got to be sure. The lessons I've learned, I can't take. Show me.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions. FMR.